and welcome back to Push to Talk with Magneto Mel. I am sitting here with our ATC Hour, and we are talking with Lutz Pritchow and Grant Anderson. So we've got a representative here speaking for all of Europe, right?
I wouldn't presume to speak for all of Europe. I can speak for Germany, but not for the rest of Europe.
So we were going to talk about some of the differences in, user fees is on the schedule, but what about just some of the differences in flying in your experience?
Well, user fees, we don't really have user fees for VFR. What happened is that the airport infrastructure doesn't really belong to or isn't run by the government anymore. In France, for instance, the government actually still runs the general aviation airport scene, and so maintenance comes out of taxation. In Germany, a couple of years back, they basically privatized most of the airfields, which means they have to look after their own costs. They have to pay for their own way. And what else can you do but charge? Well, you'd call it user fees. We have landing fees. Shocker to most of the Americans I've spoken to when you put your Piper Cub down and it's like $20 a landing. So I've had instances where I've done an hour of touch and goes and the landings have been more expensive than the actual flying hour.
Wow.
But
we've got a few airports here that you'll pay to land, but you don't try to go there.
Well, in Germany, it's pretty every airfield. We have, unfortunately, also we have airfield. You have to land at airfields. You can't just land on any field anywhere. So if you fly, you have to actually land at an airport or an airfield. So even if you land at a glider field, you still have to land at a field, and it's inevitably involved with paying money. It varies. The cheapest will be probably 2-3 euros, is about $4 a landing, and it'll go right up to... I did a landing with somebody's Cherokee 6 a while back, and it was 38 euros, so it's about $60 to land at a mid-sized airport, which was, you know.
In addition to the flight time and every other expense.
Yeah, right. Gasoline and at the moment
is that comparable?
Well, gasoline, Avgas, I put in Avgas just the other day, €2.50 a litre. We worked out, what is that? That's about $14 a gallon.
So. Yeah, that's not really comparable.
Okay.
we're having a hard time with stuff getting up over $5 around here. So.
No, well, Avgas, everything in flying is expensive. There is a theory going around that the government's basically trying to kill general aviation. They're doing a good job at the moment, but we're hanging in there. We fly smaller aeroplanes, lighter aeroplanes. We use a lot of automotive engines, Volkswagen engines that don't use much fuel. And people get around. There's a lot of gliding. There's a big gliding scene to keep costs down. But yeah, user fees are a problem for general aviation, and it's certainly, it hasn't killed it, but it's adding to the total cost of flying, which means the average pilot doesn't fly as much as the guys in the US do, so they're not as proficient, their radio work is not as good, which means they can't help themselves when they get lost, and their basic flying proficiency is just really bad. The general pilot flies 20 hours a year. You know, if you're doing 15 to 20 hours a year, you've actually had a good year.
Wow. And now that's from the perspective of a pilot, but you also work as this is the ATC Hour. You work in air traffic control there as well.
Yeah, and okay, I'm an area controller.
How does that play out in terms of, I think the user fees that we're talking about here are for using the services of air traffic control, more so than, I guess, landings and whatnot. So how is that?
Okay, again, air traffic control in Europe, and this is now a European thing, so it's not a thing that just runs in Germany. It's actually run by Eurocontrol. There's a pay-as-you-go policy. You basically, the same way as you use a toll road, it's the same thing. You pay for the airline, or the airline is paid to use the airways. The cost gets deducted by the fact that what is the airplane weigh? How far is it going? Costs vary in Europe. Strangely enough, Germany is actually one of the cheaper places to fly. Italy, for instance, is very expensive. And they basically charge you for the routes that you file. And it's because the government doesn't pay for ATC anymore, it's got to finance itself. And how else can you finance it but to charge the airline's user fees?
But and now you're just saying airlines. You're not.
Yeah,
this is not a cost that's passed to
general. Everybody who flies IFR.
Okay.
So it's for all IFR flying. If you file an IFR flight plan, you have to pay. If you use the IFR system, you have to pay. VFR, you're not paying anything at the moment. They did talk about, it was on the cards a while back, but it pretty much got scrapped because there's no way to enforce it. But if you fly IFR and you're in the system, you pay. You pay for landings, you pay for the route that you use, you pay for the weather, the flight planning, the whole shebang. And well, the airlines, it's part of doing business.
It
just gets put onto the price. And, you know, that's how we run the show. And
But if you're a private pilot, IFR, it's going to be
yeah, if you're
part
a private
of your
pilot
experience
IFR,
as well.
You, but you pretty much, it makes it even more expensive. Right. So we have a very small general aviation IFR population. The people, it's minimal.
Well, and you said the reason, I don't know if it's what they've declared or if it's your opinion on it, but the reason why they don't do it to VFR is because they can't catch it, they can't enforce it.
Well, the funny thing is we've actually just started with Mode Sierra transponders. So now, of course, it's getting easier because if you have a Mode Sierra transponder, we can pretty much look on the scope and see who you are. But there's not really a way of enforcing it. And I think they've pretty much maxed out in terms of how much money they can get out of GA. And even though there's not a real big lobby, there is a little bit of a lobby. And they had a thing a couple of years back where they wanted to get user fees for GA. And GA kind of said, well, we can't really afford it, because they were talking about charging, it was like a flat rate fee. I'm just taking it off the top of my head, but I think they wanted to charge every aircraft owner something like 7,000 euros a year as a kind of a flat tax. And then the glider pilots immediately kicked up a huge stink and said, well, you know, we just can't afford it. If you do that, we're going to go bankrupt.
Right.
And so that got taken off again. They usually sell it under the auspices of it being environmentally friendly. All of the stuff is normally an associated, like the landing fees is how much noise does the engine produce. And if you have a noisy engine, you pay more. If you have a less noisy, you pay less. So a lot of it gets sold on the wallets for the environment ticket. But really all it is, and this is my personal opinion, is they're trying to kill general aviation. And they're doing a good job because they are killing it.
There are other ways to approach the environmental issues without trying to charge.
Tax
everything. Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff in research these days is working on engine out approaches and, you know, just to balance that in the vicinity of airports. So that's kind of...
Now, on the VFR, whenever your all's version of ADS-B, was it SASAR?
Yeah.
Now, would they be able to use that to charge VFR pilots whenever all the planes, whenever if they force planes to become equipped?
No, they won't. They tried... I think the furthest we've gone at the moment is Mode Sierra. I don't think it's going to go any further than that, because every time you do a retrofit like that, first of all, you're getting into the point where some of the airplanes can't actually take the weight anymore physically. I mean, you can't put in transponders and more equipment and more. We've just got the new ELT thing, the 406. So
you can put anything on the plane as long as it doesn't weigh anything. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And we've generally, I mean, the plane, I own a motor glider. I mean, it weighs like 480 pounds. And I mean, I can't put an ELT in it on the tail because it'll go out of balance. So we have a special dispensation to fly without ELTs. There's just so much you can put in. And I mean, putting in a radio changes the CFG, putting in a transponder changes it. And when the thing weighs 250 kilos and every piece of equipment weighs 1 kilogram, you know, before you blink, you've put 10 kilos on it, and then that's 5% overweight. So a lot of the stuff has been capped purely because it's physically not possible anymore, especially for the glider guys. I mean, the glider guys, there's just so much you can put into a glider. And then, of course, how do you power it all? That's the next big problem, because it doesn't run by itself. It needs power, so you need a battery and more weight, and, you know, the thing just snowballs.
So they're kind of picking their battles.
Yeah. I don't think what's happened in Germany or what's happening in Europe, in Italy, for instance, as well, is people are moving towards ultralights. The Italian GA scene, I believe, I've just got told recently by a friend of mine, is pretty much dead. People are all flying ultralights because ultralights are the last resort of free and easy. And in Italy, ultralights run on the basis of, as long as they stay below 300 feet, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They're not regulated. They're not.
I've heard that.
And that's the same thing in Germany. Now, the ultralights
in
Germany.
It's not that flat there where one can do that easily, however.
Nah, in Germany, I don't think we're ready to go free and easy just yet. But the ultralight scene in Germany is big. I mean, it's the only flying scene that's actually increased its pilot population in the last couple of years. There are a lot of ultralights. But again, the boundaries of where ultralights are at have been reached. I mean, in Germany, ultralights are defined by weight. And we have ultralights that'll do 130 knots with variable pitch propellers, retractable undercarriage, that'll outgun Cessna 182s. And of course, because of the weight problem, these things are built to such tight specifications that you pretty much, if you go into turbulence, and we've had instances, I don't want to name the aircraft, but there was an ultralight, there were a couple of fatalities. And of course, when that happens, immediately the government's on the plan, and now there's a big hoo-ha, because they always say, when you weigh an airplane, don't trust the weight and balance sheet unless you fudged it yourself. That happens a lot. There's a lot of fudging going on. And now the planes actually get weighed, and they sent out a whole bunch of inspectors, and they were actually putting the things on the scale. And planes that were supposed to weigh 290 kilos, according to the paperwork, were weighing 330. Now, that's 40 kilos on 290. It's almost 20%
overweight.
It's
like our weigh stations here on the freeways for these for these large axle trucks.
And so the ultralight scene is maxed out. People are trying to use GA airplanes in ultralights, and that's not what ultralight was ever intended for. I mean, ultralights were intended to be open, easy, casual. And so we're in a bit of a... we're kind of in a it's a balanced thing. They're trying to push the envelope on the one side, but on the other side, there's the real ultralight guys that want to keep it simple and not get over-regulated. And that's going to, I think, be the last resort for GA in Europe, is that people are going to just gyrate towards ultralight. And it's happening in Italy. It's coming in Germany. It's been happening and all over Europe. More people fly ultralights or they fly motor gliders. I mean, motor gliders in Germany are a really big scene.
Well, now, what are you guys, Grant? We haven't heard too much from you in the
scene unusual.
Here in the U.S.
That was a first.
I mean, one of the things that you'd said about them not being able to force the VFR was a big concern about imposing user fees here on general aviation, is that people would just not use it then. They just won't talk to ATC. Everybody will go VFR. They'll go VFR without talking.
Well, it's a huge issue, and I think you've seen that in other examples of mostly privatized system. Australia, Great Britain, Canada, where, especially in the Australian case, where there's not only whole areas where people are not trying to use services, but there's whole areas where services aren't available for budgetary measures, which is, I guess I should say, first off, as far as NACA, the National Air Traffic Controllers, is concerned, we don't have any official position on user fees. But the general thought is, if there's something that's going to work, we haven't seen it yet, by example, of what else has happened in other countries. And you add into that some of the complexities of the U.S. system is unique unto itself. It's the largest and busiest and most complex.
Yeah.
Well, so it's well over 50% of the entire air traffic in the world passes through this. So it's a daunting task to convert to that. So we haven't seen a workable model yet. So I guess that's not so much opposition as what can we see? At least right now for this year, of course, in the last time or when initially FAA reauthorization, which is where much of this would come about, and as well as at some in appropriations on the legislative side, Senator Lott and Rockefeller were running the subcommittee, and they were all in favor of user fees, and eventually got narrowed down. The House side was fine, but the Senate side had a push. This most recent reiteration of FAA reauthorization, Senator Rockefeller is still around, but he's the chairman of the overall committee now, and nothing has appeared in the Senate side or the House side, although the Obama administration in their initial proposal did have user fees, surprisingly. So at least it appears for right now that it's a non-issue for the moment.
Yeah, I haven't been hearing too much about it recently, but then the economy the way it is. Now, you said that flight activity and generally aviation in Germany has increased over the last couple of years.
No, actually, the ultralight scene.
The general aviation is
down.
Dying.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know here, it's just, at least where I am, it's hit so hard. Not just what's happening with aviation, but the economy in general.
It's going down.
Economy, fuel, everything. Yeah, it's just drowning it.
I mean,
the amount of traffic that you guys run is lower now than...
Oh, yeah, as far as GA and corporate, for that matter, throwing a... everything in the batch, it's way down, and it's not due to, of course, to regulation or anything else. The GA scene in the U.S. is wholly unique unto itself as far as the breadth and volume and available airspace.
And
but,
people
wow.
come here still, you know,
absolutely.
From other countries. But I know a lot of some other countries are opening up their GA experience a little bit more. I don't know, maybe ours is just not as attractive anymore. It's getting more expensive. You know, China's starting to do something with that. That's amusing. So
I don't think I'm going to go and fly in Peking just yet. Just keep coming here. Well, the cost has certainly gone up here. I mean, I used to fly out of Fort Lauderdale 15 years ago, and I mean, we used to wet lease a Cessna 152. I think it was like $49.
Yeah, when I started, it was $13 for an instructor and $35 for the plane.
Well, I used to get it for, I think, $49.
I just dated myself. Didn't
That's because you're not from around here. Yeah. They charge you a little different.
Okay, that was
really no problem that GA scene has that unlimited cash can't cure.
Yeah.
Barring that,
unfortunately,
we've got a
Fort William. Yeah, that's not exactly the...
Of course, one of the things you forget in America as well, which is the EAA right here, is the experimental scene. Now, in Germany, the experimental scene, it's actually a sad joke. I don't think it's a joke, it's just sad. They have, just the figures off the top of my head, I think there's about 150 experimentals flying, and we're talking a population of 80 million. So we have a third of the population of the U.S. We have 150 flying experimentals and about 250 under construction. Don't call me on the numbers, it might be a little bit either way. But that's more or less what we're looking at. And I mean, that's just a pathetic joke.
Yeah.
It's the regulation is so tight to get an experimental registered. the fees are in the range of $3,000 to $5,000 just for the paperwork, and then you haven't started building the experimental. And in the French have a totally different system, which is way cheaper and much easier. And they have about 4,000 experimentals flying. So you can just see the difference there already, that alone the experimental scene in America is keeping general aviation alive. And instead of using that in Germany...
Barely these days.
Though. Well, they're doing a lot better than we are. The German guys are just... They've got a very different mindset, unfortunately. And there's just no experimental building going on. There's no encouragement. People don't want to do it. There's just nothing. It's actually sad. And that's probably a bastion that we should have looked at, because that makes flying cheaper or more reasonable. And so we don't have that.
Hate to break on the sad note, but we will be right back. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break now here on EAA Radio. You are listening to Push to Talk, the ATC Hour with Magneto Mel.